In really local news, Kellex Nelson updates us on RCD.
A lot of what we're working on right now are what we call longevity measures for the dredge. So, you know, we did that dredge, but we want to make sure that it holds up. Right now, it looks like it's been working, but let's all be aware of the fact that it was a really dry year. And we're in an epically dry year. So we're continuing to do things, you know, floodplain restoration and things upstream that will protect the dredge and make it last longer and kind of just fix how that creek flows, as well as the habitat in that creek for the fish that can now go through.
Now, are the fish going through? Is that what you're, one of the things you're looking at?
Or we will be monitoring to see that. The a number of partners did monitor in the lagoon this year, and there are a lot of beautiful, big, healthy fish that are growing in that. It's really, really exciting. So I would fully expect that they'd be going up into Butte now, not Tuscadero, but we haven't done all that monitoring yet, and a number of partners will.
Now, the floodplain restoration, are you doing that in a specific area right now, or is this just in the works?
A lot of that is in the works, or we're talking with landowners and doing designs and that sort of thing, and then probably wouldn't talk about it until they give us permission and we've got something specific moving forward.
Okay.
So that's one of the things that we're working on, is making sure that the dredge keeps strong, you know, right. that it holds up. Another thing that we'll be doing soon that's going to involve the community is one of the things that we've really heard. We've been, as many people have, we've been giving a lot of thought for a while now about whether we're fully serving our community. The history of resource conservation districts back when we were formed in the 30s was to work with landowners. And in our county, a lot of the people who have needs around natural resources are not landowners and likely never will be. So,
meaning because they work the land, but they can't afford to own it. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, they might be renters. They might be people who work the land. Right. We have people who are business owners, but are tenants on, you know, post or mid-pen property. We have people who are farm laborers. We have people who aren't in agriculture at all, who aren't going to own land. So when we think a lot about our approach to diversity, equity, and inclusion, we're thinking a lot about who are the members of our community that we have least served. Okay. And when we came to, particularly in the South Coast, and started asking, you know, sitting down with people and asking, are we serving you? One of the things that we heard from people is we need help knowing if our drinking water is clean. So one of the things that we're doing now to be responsive to that is we received a grant and we're going to prepare kits and pass them out so that people in the South Coast can test their own drinking water at home. And then we'll run them through a lab and give people information. So that was
now this would not apply to CSA 11. This would be outside of that, correct? In other words, in CSA 11, we have a water treatment system. Presumably, they're testing the water and making sure it's drinkable, but outside of that.
You know, we haven't completely defined yet who will be able to receive this, but my inclination right now is that it will be places that don't already have an entity that's testing the quality of their water.
Right.
But if there's enough to go around, then maybe people could do that at home too, because they might have issues with their own pipe inside their house, which is separate from the CSA water.
Okay. And how is this, you know, just for my own confusion, how does this come under RCD? Is the water also something that you guys deal with, or is this a service to the community that you feel is appropriate for RCD, or how does this come under your umbrella?
Yeah, that's something I've asked about myself and my board and my staff about for a number of years. The RCD's mandate is very, very broad. The way that we're written, we're established in Division 9 of the Public Resources Code. And it basically says anything that's natural resource related, if it's a priority of the community, we can address it.
Okay.
And this is interpreted in different ways across the state. There are RCDs that are the ones that put on their local farmers markets. There are RCDs that do really widely different things. The thing that's really the continuous theme across RCDs is responding to local priorities. And so we've been giving a lot of thought to making sure that we're truly responding to local priorities.
Great.
So that water quality issue or program is going to come up soon. Another thing that we're working on right now is we do a lot of things related to climate change, really two aspects of climate change. One is helping to prepare the lands for the eventuality of climate change and what's already happening. And the other is to help reduce, you know, mitigate or reverse climate change. Mm-hmm. the Dredge Project was an example of something that's to adapt to climate change. To reverse right. climate change, our primary program is what's called carbon farming. And that's basically focused, again, on working lands, ranch lands, row crops, but focused on agricultural production, where we see agriculture as part of the solution. We often hear agriculture targeted as a problem. In our experience and in our work and core value to our programs is that agricultural operators are stewards of these lands. They have been for a long time, and they're essential partners. And we see agricultural producers as part of the solution to climate change. And there's immense ability to draw down carbon dioxide from the atmosphere and store it in the healthy soils and vegetation from which it came.
This is kind of what Audria was talking about.
That's right.
She said they wanted to talk about or get feedback about the environmental benefits of working agricultural lands.
That's right. So Audria manages our climate and ag program. Okay. And one of the many things that we're doing through that under that umbrella, in addition to carbon farming, is helping the county update its climate action plan to include a new chapter on working lands.
I am going to be speaking. I did speak recently to someone, Ivana. I can't
Andrade.
Remember. Andrade. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she and I spoke, and then we're going to speak again in another month or so about how to get how to reach out to the whole community to get feedback on climate change strategies.
Right.
And one of the things we're working on is just an outreach plan or a communications plan. How do we reach out to our community in an equitable way that includes every aspect of the community? It's a big issue. It's something that took up all our time practically when we were planning the town planning initiative. So it's a challenge. It's a
yeah.
big deal.
Yeah, and it's something, as I mentioned, that we're giving a lot of thought to as well. We okay. also give thought to people who have stake in these lands who no longer live here, like indigenous folks. You know, mm-hmm. this is still land that matters to them, even if they don't own it, don't work it, don't live here. It still mm-hmm. is part of their heritage. And what does that mean for them to be a stakeholder for us?
Mm-hmm. Possibly MROSD and the that Ohlone Heritage Trail may have something to do with that. And you guys work with MROSD as well, do you
know? We do, and we work with the Amamutsun Tribal Band, and we talk to other indigenous folks. So it's not something that we're not doing. It's just something, in fact, it's the opposite. It's something that we're really putting a lot of thought and effort into right now. You know, when you do land-based work, what does it mean to work with people who aren't on the land mm-hmm. is an interesting thought.
Well, and if they're indigenous people, you know, how, in what way do you work with them? And honestly, I guess it's how they want you to, right?
That's right. And so there's different ways that we can work with them. One is we consult with them before certain projects to, if they have an interest in the area, to get their input. Another is, you know, we've partnered with State Parks and the Amamutsun Tribal Band on the Carostee Valley restoration that they're doing. I've been in conversations with some indigenous folks on returning to Coho welcoming ceremony for
really?
The community so that the community could be invited to welcome the Coho when they return.
That is so great. That's a very important thing, I think, to have ceremonies that acknowledge the changes in the land and the water.
That's right. That's Our board has been considering having land recognition, land acknowledgement at the beginning of board meetings. Mm-hmm. And so we've been asking tribal folks for input about whether that's appropriate, whether that's desirable, how to do it, whether we'd be appropriating their culture. You know, is it respectful or is it diminishing? Those kinds of things.
I read your equity statement, and I wonder if you want to talk about that for just a minute. It had more to do with not so much the people that your clients as much as about your employees and things like that, as far as I remember. But maybe you could talk just for a minute about the equity statement that you put yeah. out recently.
Yeah, happy to. And then maybe we could come back to me quickly talking about what's going on in Pescadero with their programs.
Okay.
So the equity statement, well, it wasn't a true full equity statement. It was really responding to what's happening to Black and brown people in this country. And it was less about staff, but it's more that it was from staff. The RCD staff felt very strongly that they wanted to take a position. We were actually, from what I understand, we were the first and at that time the only RCD in the state to issue a statement, one of two in the nation. Wow. The other was in Portland.
People don't understand how different your RCD is, Calix. I wish they did. I mean, you're first in the nation in every way.
Thank you.
They just don't get it.
Well, thank you.
But anyway, I will let you continue.
Well, I have to give kudos to staff because I was going to water it down. I was maybe afraid of pushback. I don't know what I was afraid of. So I thought, well, maybe it's not inclusive enough if we just say, you know, Black people or what have you. And then staff pushback, particularly, we have a diversity, equity, and inclusion committee on our staff. And we have a few people on staff who are people of color. And they said, no, right now, what's this moment in this country, in this need, the driver for this is about what's happening to Black men. Right. And we need to do what's right and talk about that. Mm-hmm. And so we issued a statement that just said, hey, we recognize that that this is going on right now. And in all humility, we recognize that we're not doing everything we can. Mm-hmm. We can be better. And that the conservation world generally is lily white.
Yep.
And we could be better, and we're taking steps to be better. And we've made a bunch of changes to be better about this. And then we ask people to tell us if they have feedback for how we can be better as well. And then we provided a number of resources for how people can connect with conservation actions and outdoor activities that are hosted by people of color or really focusing on people of color.
Okay. That's great. And then you wanted to follow up with some of the things you're working on that affect Pescadero.
Sure. Let's see. So we talked a little bit about this water quality, the residential or domestic water quality. We talked about the longevity measures for the dredge. We talked about carbon farming and the climate action plan. Mm-hmm. I think something that's really visible to people on the South Coast are the ponds that we put in,
right?
You've seen them on like D. Harley's is probably the most visible, but there's a number of others that we've worked on.
Let me interject our movie, our new drive-in movie is happening August 7th at Harley Farms Field, right next to that pond.
Really?
That would be
fun to do something like some introduction about the pond.
I would love it. The movie is called Big Friendly Giant, and it's an
BFT. I love BFT.
Exactly.
My kids have watched BFT like 15 times.
Yeah, so come on down, and it starts at 8:30, which means really probably 8:45, depending on when the sun really goes down. Everybody will be in their cars and safe, and they don't even need to roll down their window. If they would like to donate, they can donate on kpdo.net, or else we have a bucket. Nobody touches anything, but, you know, puts their money in a bucket. So,
oh my God, that's great. We will try to come. I have to tell you, you will hear us shrieking with laughter from 10 cars away. That movie is so funny.
I hope you do. I hope you do. That would
we'll
be
try
so
to come
great.
Down. That's one of our favorites. Let's see. So, the ponds, what those ponds do is you hear all the time about conflicts between fish and farmers. You hear about it in the Delta. It's all lawsuits, right?
Right.
You don't hear about it much in coastal San Mateo County. And part of that is because we've been solving it and people don't hear good news. Mm-hmm. So these ponds are a big part of the solution. Here you've got these small coastal creeks and this limited water resource between those creeks and the groundwater, which is connected to the creeks in many mm-hmm. cases or most cases. You've got farms, fish, and people all depending on very limited water resources. How do we do that? How do we keep the farms viable and make sure that there's water for these endangered fish? And one way that you do that is through really extensive water conservation. So we've been working with a lot of farms to overhaul their irrigation systems, et cetera. Another way that you do that is through changing the way that water is managed. A key technique is to have water storage so that these farmers can divert from the creeks when the water is higher and then store the water in these reservoirs and use it on their crops when the creek is lower. Mm-hmm. It sounds simple. It's unbelievably complicated.
Why?
The permitting, the water rights, there's it's a different water right to take water from a creek than it is to store water. And the water rights and the sequencing of these things, and all of these different agencies have some overlapping jurisdiction. And so, you know, like you have to have a bullfrog management plan for this permit, but then you also need it for the water right. And then this agency has to consult with that agency. And maybe they're saying different things. We've been trying to get the State Water Resources Control Board to finalize their comments on a 3-page document we gave them last July about frog management that already has the approval from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that have jurisdiction over the frog.
Wow. This kind of stuff. You would know more about the complications of regulations than almost anybody else. Maybe you can go to the state and say, hey, guys, let's fix this.
Well, in fact, Catherine, one of the things that we're working on is what I actually, for much of this year, I was on detail working with the Secretary of Natural Resources for California for about 90% of my time each week from about November through March on an initiative called Cutting Green Tape. And I can send you the link to it. So basically, we hosted a series of roundtables with leaders from throughout California, heads of agencies, heads of NGOs, environmental advocates, et cetera, and developed a list of about 40 different actions the state can take to streamline permitting for restoration.
Wow.
So that, because I frequently talk about how, ironically, the single greatest barrier to my protecting natural resources are the regulations intended to protect natural resources. So we need right-fitting regulations. Like the regulations were designed and they work well to stop bad impacts. They're not designed well to accelerate good, beneficial actions. Mm-hmm. So actually that is something that I've been working on.
Good.
And
excellent.
And so that's, and we did hear from people that they wanted fewer regulatory barriers to getting these things done. So, you know, it was a priority. So we've been working on it. And the way to work on it was through Sacramento.
You know, I don't want to keep you any longer than you have time for, but I do want to ask you, I know that you're going to the Sustainable Pescadero meetings, you're going to the PMAC meetings. This is one of your main ways of outreach. We need a wastewater treatment system, and I'm telling you that for the, 2000th time, and it has nothing to do with the RCD, really, but I know that you've somehow managed to help on things that didn't seem like they were an issue for the RCD, and I would really appreciate, I think everybody would appreciate any input, ideas, feedback you might have regarding how can we do this? And does Sustainable Pescadero have to become a nonprofit or something in order to make this happen?
You know, as you know, we have been engaging with those conversations. We're, I think we're not driving it, but if there's some more specificity, we're tracking the conversation because we want to be able to help. And I think there is a nexus to a lot of work that's absolutely relevant to what we do, you know, to the extent that that it enables people to get off of septic fields that can impact water quality, to the extent that it might be the water, treated water might be a resource. You know, we do a lot of recycled water related work. If that can help people take less from groundwater or the creek, you know, all these things, it's a conservation practice. And so we're definitely interested in helping with that. And we've been, you know, kind of on the margins of the conversation because it doesn't seem like it's fully gelled yet, but we can definitely help with that. And if what is proposed is something that really has the potential to have conservation benefit, then we would definitely be helpful. You know, we've been working with Sewer Authority Mid-Coastside on recycled wastewater.
Really?
Yeah, so we could.
Well, it looks like Mid-Peninsula Housing or their Mid-Pen Housing is going to do a potential housing project that would require a wastewater treatment system, and they are willing to do the funding for a feasibility analysis. And I want to make sure that that feasibility analysis integrates what you're talking about. you know, how it can be something that's supported by RCD and works with RCD to help make sure that the septic waters are, I mean, the septic systems are eliminated in favor of having clean water that is clean, I guess, runoff, right, so that the creeks have clean water.
You know, water's a resource.
Yeah.
Water is a resource, and increasingly people are understanding that that water needs to be reused and that there are ways of cleaning it and reusing it. So we are certainly very interested in helping with anything that integrates that project with all aspects of water resource management.
Okay. Well, I'm going to make sure that that is something people are aware of, because one of the, I think, strengths of the sustainable meetings is that they help people to understand what other people are doing so that they can collaborate, integrate, offer support, etc.
Right. Hey,
okay.
Can I just throw out one last thing there, which is fire?
Sure.
So many people have met Sheena on our staff, who's heading up our forest health and fire resilience program. And that is another thing where we responded to community requests. Mm-hmm. And we heard a lot of people are really scared. Many of us are living on the wildland urban interface, mm-hmm, and that where there are, you know, residential pockets surrounded by or adjacent to wildlands, there's a lot of concerns about the risk of catastrophic wildfire in these communities. And it used to be, when I started working on this stuff, like maybe 15 years ago, 20 years ago, people thought, well, fire happens in Santa Cruz. like it's not going to cross the county line, you know. Now it seems like a lot more people are aware, because of what's been happening in California, of the risk, and are really engaging. So with the chipper program to help take away people's fuel load, working on permitting to be able to programmatically permit larger fuel reduction projects, bringing resources into the county, and also working with our partners in Santa Cruz, working across counties, because fire doesn't know borders.
In 1900, there was a fire that went from Santa Cruz County all the way through all of the mountains here. And you can see the scars on the redwood trees now.
Wow.
It was massive.
And in the earlier part of the last century, there was also a fire in El Granada that killed a number of people.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Did not know that.
Yeah.
Yes, we're aware of it. In fact, in Butte No Canyon, there's going to be a chipper program at the end of August or the beginning of September. So we're very aware of Sheena and what she's doing. And Casey Dunn is working closely with you, I know.
Right.
And we're also, you know, KPDO is very interested in emergency response and working with the ham radio people. And we have a ham radio at the studio and neighborhood coordination and all that good stuff. So we appreciate what you're doing.
Thank you. I want to be really clear and not take credit, and be very clear of the fact that that the RCD doesn't do any of this alone. It's always with partners. Like the fire program is with the Fire Safe Council and CAL FIRE. And, you know, everything I've talked about is either standing on the shoulders of giants or working closely with others. We only work where we're invited, and always leveraging others' resources. So if I talk about what the RCD is doing, I want to be clear that it's not just us.
I do want to really talk about a little bit, very briefly, when I went through the review that LAFCO did, that's the first time I realized that the amount of the value of the projects you're managing and implementing has just skyrocketed over the last few years. And in, I think, 2015, you had $2 million worth of projects, and then in 2020, you had 13 million, or 2019, you had $13 million worth of projects. It's like, wow, you are mushrooming.
Well, you know, it's gone back down this year. A lot of that is because our operating budget is relatively consistent. It's been growing, certainly. When I started at the RCD, I was the only full-time person, and now we have 15. But our operating budget isn't really increasing now. We've pretty much plateaued. But there's big fluctuations in our budget based on whether our work is largely like passed through like a capital project or planning. Mm-hmm. So the dredge was a very expensive project. So our budget was huge because we had money coming through our organization to that. These ponds are costly. A lot of these things are really costly. You know, if most of our work on a given year is carbon farm planning and a chipper program, you'll see a budget that's much lower.
In regard to ponds, because I know somebody else who wants to put a pond in, is it something that's possible for a farmer and RCD to work together to restore a pond?
Yeah, we do that all the time.
Okay, and it's not prohibitively expensive, or maybe it is, I don't know.
Everybody defines that differently. So, yeah. you know, but also the restoration of a pond, it depends on what it needs. That's like saying how expensive is, you know, a home improvement project. It really depends on what the project is, not the home is.
Right. Well, Kelix, I really appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you.
And this is going to be in the really local news. And we'll probably be playing for a few days or weeks even. Who knows?
Right.
So I really appreciate it. And I hope we can keep talking periodically and getting updates as we go.
Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity. Thanks, Catherine.
All right.
Talk to you later.